Hey fans, welcome to Sideline Attraction. I'm your host, Taylor Ahrens, and this is a no-level playing field because I'm calling the shots on these interviews and nothing is off limits. So step up to the plate, it's game on. Hey y'all, welcome to Sideline Attraction. I am so excited for this episode because I got to learn about a sport, and I know you're going to learn about this sport that not many know of, and it needs to be because it is insane. My guest is a USA bobsled and skeleton team member. He does skeleton as his sport, and I'm going to give you a little wiki definition of skeleton before we dive into the interview so you have some prior knowledge. Skeleton is a winter sliding sport in which a person rides a small sled known as a skeleton bobsled down a frozen track while leaning face down and head first. Yes, face down and head first. They're just, you know, diving into the ice track. And you'll soon learn it's really fast, like up to 90 miles per hour. That's insane. I just had the best time talking with him. I went all over the place because I just had so many questions popping up, and it was just a great interview, and you're going to love him and love his personality and his story. And let's just get to it because it's awesome. Sliding onto the ice is Matt Fortney.
For sure.
Appreciate you being on here.
Yeah, not a problem.
I am so excited to talk to you. I watch so many videos of skeleton and I am so intrigued. And I guess we'll just start with you and get to know you. Where did you grow up?
So I'm originally from Canton, Ohio, home of the Football Hall of Fame. I'm not sure if you've ever been up this way or been to the Hall of Fame. But that's, you know, where NFL started. So it's kind of cool that I'm from there. I currently live in Akron, Ohio, which is just north of that. Mm-hmm. Pretty much where LeBron lives. I went to Kent State University, or where LeBron grew up, but I went to Kent State University, the state school here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've been in Ohio my whole life. Besides traveling the past few years and living in Utah and New York, yeah, mm-hmm. I've just been grounded in Ohio. So
that's awesome. I have actually never been to the Football Hall of Fame. That's one of those things on my bucket list. And it's so cool that you're from there. And it was obviously mm-hmm. cold in Ohio. So how did you get into this sport?
Yeah, so normally bobsled skeleton, it's a transition type sport where mm-hmm. Normally people don't grow up in the sport of bobsled or skeleton. There's only two places in the U.S. to even do it. It's in Lake Placid, New York, or Park City, Utah. Mm-hmm. So either you live in Salt Lake City or you live in Lake Placid, you're never really going to know about the sport. But 2018, watching the Olympics, at this point, I was 2 years out of the military. I decided, you know, I still want to do something for U.S. and I'm still pretty fit at this point. Mm-hmm. Just watching the Olympics, I came across bobsled skeleton. Obviously, bobsled, a lot of those athletes are just big, bulky, football player type athletes. And that's usually where their background comes from. Mm-hmm. But on the skeleton side, they looked a lot smaller. And I'm like, wait a minute, I wonder if, you know, I could give this a try. At this point, it was 2018. I work full time. Mm-hmm. In office here in Ohio. I work for FedEx. At that time, I didn't really think of anything of it, but I did reach out to some of the athletes at the time, and they told me I had to get out to Lake Placid or Park City and give it a try. It wasn't until we all went remote in 2020, mm-hmm. And I flew out to Park City. It was literally like a Christmas vacation for myself, but also to give the sport a try. Mm-hmm. In late 2020, I gave it a try that week, and I was told that there was sliding opportunities in the month of February. So I flew home, I packed up my car, drove to Park City. I stayed in Airbnb for a month. So the whole month of February, that was all the sliding I did, you know, that first year. Mm-hmm. After that summer, there was offered a combine, so kind of like an NFL combine, but just, you know, a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. Back in Park City, so I flew out to Park City, competed in the combine, and then I got invited back for full season of sliding that winter. So again, I packed up my car in November. I drove out to Utah and I was able to get an apartment with, now he's, you know, one of my best friends, his name's Patrick. He's on the Canadian team. We literally met through a friend. We were both looking for a roommate at the time to try to help with expenses because Park City is not a cheap place to live.
Right.
And that's one thing about our sport too. Every place we go to is in a resort town. So everywhere we go, it's very expensive to travel to and stay. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky to meet him and we shared an apartment literally at the Olympic Park in Utah. So I stood there the entire winter from November to March. And then during that time, I had the opportunity from the USABS, which is our governing body. Mm-hmm. I got invited to Lake Placid to slide in my first camp. While I was in Utah, it was just the Utah, it's the program that they offer at the track. So I was just sliding in that, trying to get my foot in the door. But then the USABS reached out and I got offered to go to Lake Placid, to the Olympic Training Center, stay there, have access to all the facilities. And yeah, that was all 2021, 2022. And then throughout the summer of 22, worked really hard, got faster at pushing. Worked my way into the fall of 2022. Mm-hmm. I was still a little bit behind on the pushing piece. So I hadn't been able to race just yet. But during World Cup came to Lake Placid, that winter, and I was able to hit what we call our standard, mm-hmm. During that time, which then provided me the opportunity to race in the spring of 23. So.
Wow. Yeah. What a story.
Yeah.
And I love that you were in the military before this, mm-hmm. and you didn't get into skeleton until later in life. I think that's probably sure. beneficial.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
Yeah, because you were, well, I was a ballroom dancer and I started around 18, 19 and everyone was like, oh, you're so young. And I was like, am I young? Like, I feel like people start when they're babies and they're like, no, this is like a sport you get into when you're older. Is that what it's like for skeleton?
For the most, for bobsled skeleton, yeah. We have, there are youth programs. Yeah. Actually, right now is the Youth Olympic Winter Games, which is being held in Korea. So we have two athletes. They're twins, Baden and Noah. I'll give them a shout out because obviously they literally had opening ceremonies this morning and they're competing at the Youth Olympics. So, and I stood with them. They're great. So yeah, they're out there competing right now.
That's so exciting.
So them, yeah, they've been around the sport. Mm-hmm. They grew up in Salt Lake. They knew about, you know, the 2002 Salt Lake Games that came there. So they've been around the sport pretty much since, you know, middle school, high school. So mm-hmm. they're the youngest that we have in the sport. And then for luge specifically, so sliding sports, there's three sliding sports. Luge is the other sport. They're a separate organization from bobsled skeleton. Mm-hmm. A lot of those will get started when they're very, very young. Okay. I'm not going to say that there's an age limit on skeleton and bobsled, but because of potential head injury, I'm pretty sure they won't let anybody really under 10 or 11 do our sport.
Oh, that's understandable.
But luge, they're literally in elementary school doing luge. So
I would be so, I guess when you're younger, you're less like scared to do things. I think you would be more willing to go head first and just slide. And I think it's so cool that you were, how long were you in the military?
6 years. So I was in aviation. So I worked on Chinook helicopters. So that was my job.
Oh, that's amazing.
The double bladed helicopter. Uh-huh. Big, one of our biggest for the U.S. Army. So
that's amazing. Well, thank you for your service. I have a lot of people in my family that were in the military. So I have a big military heart. So I always love to hear that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to hear when you initially got into skeleton, like I knew you had like an interest. You saw it on TV, the Olympic Games. Tell me about like that first initial actually trying it. What were the emotions going into it? Were you scared, excited? Because what you're doing is pretty intimidating.
For sure. So yeah, I got to Park City, met with I'll give a shout out to Matt Griff, because I know he's going to watch this. He's actually coaching those two twins in Park City right now. And he was the one that was there first to, you know, push me off on my first time down the track. So we started from corner 11 in Park City, and Park City has 15 corners. So I only got to experience four corners. But you go, I mean, from 11 to 15, we got up to about 40 miles an hour. You literally just lay there and do nothing. So it's really all out of your control at that point. There's nothing you can really do. But I was scared. I mean, it's something new, obviously. It's unlike anything you've ever done. You're completely exposed. There's nothing around you. Bobsled, at least you're in a cocoon for the most part. So at least you have some protection, but for us, we have none. But that was my first initial experience. So I got two runs from corner 11. When I went back in February, I went straight to corner 6. So I started from corner 6 all the way to corner 15. We're going about 60 mile an hour from there. I spent the whole month of February from there. It wasn't until the following year that I moved up to corner 2. So they would let us in at corner 2. So no pushing still at this point. We would be just setting the track and let go. We can get up to about 75 mile an hour just by sliding pretty much from corner 2. And then right before I went to Lake Placid for that invite, I went from the top in Park City twice. I think that was more, even though I've been down the track at this point probably around 50 or 60 times, it was completely different. Completely different experience going from the top versus going from the lower starts.
Oh, for sure. I can imagine that's a lot different. So I know you went at different points and you built up to it. How long is how do you call it? Is it called a track or a course?
It's called a track. Yeah, we call it a track. They vary. Yeah, they vary. Park City is 15 corners. It's one of the shorter tracks. We can get down in times of about 48 to 49 seconds. When I was originally starting, I was going 55, 56 from the top. So just experience will get more time. Lake Placid, when I first went to Lake Placid, I think my first time off the top, I went over a minute. And now I'm going about 55 seconds. The track is a lot longer and just a little bit slower than Park City. And then also this last winter, I went to the fastest track in the world and spent 2 weeks in Whistler, Canada. It's a longer track, but it's fast. So it's about 55 seconds, but you're going about 86 to, you know, 88 miles an hour.
That's fast. I feel like that would be so
exhilarating. You can't tell though.
Really?
It is, but you can't really. So you're not thinking about how fast you're going, right? Like you have a job to execute. Everything around you is white.
Exactly.
Because it's ice. You know you're going fast just because of what you're doing. But when you're actually doing it, you're not thinking about that. You're thinking, one, how am I going to get down safely? And how am I going to get down fast?
Right. Because there's no brakes.
When you're first starting, yes. Correct.
And then...
Yeah, when you're first starting, it feels like that. Feels like, oh, this is fast, this is different. But once you start working your way to the top, at a certain point, fast is fast, and you just have to accept it.
Right. It's like fast is fast, and you kind of just, I feel like you would have to go, it's kind of like a dance, a rhythm. You kind of flow down. And then I know you steered. When I was watching videos, you use your shoulders, I think. How do you steer?
That's correct. So we use our shoulders and our knees. For lighter steers, we're going to use our shoulders. So to put it like this, opposite shoulder, same knee. So if I want to influence the sled to go left, I'm pushing my left knee into the sled and my right shoulder. If I want to influence the sled to go right, I'm pushing my right knee into the sled and my left shoulder. More aggressive steers, we can use our toes. They're literally like anchoring as a handbrake, and we can just drop our toe to be able to change.
You said your toe?
Yeah, so we can use our toe. Normally, we want to keep our feet off the ice. Obviously, that's fast. But in a track like Whistler, would you need to be able to change the direction of the sled quickly? Just a quick little toe tap, you can get the sled pointed in the direction that you want.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's so funny. Like my toes are always crazy because I'm a runner. I'm like, oh, what would I do without a toe? But you need your toes for your sport.
Right.
That's
for
so
sure,
cool.
For sure. Well, and I'll actually, on that note too, I'll show you this real quick. So this is our spike.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, what do y'all wear in shoes wise, but you're showing us.
Yeah. So they're like a sprint spike. The only difference is we have 200 plus spikes on top.
Right.
So this is what helps us dig into the ice. And then on the toe, this toe is like, it's a protective cap, and you can obviously see it's, if I get to the camera here, it's worn from me using my toes.
Right.
So yeah, this is our spike. It's pretty light. This thing's made by OnCloud. We only have a few manufacturers. We used to have Adidas making spikes, but unfortunately not anymore.
Right.
So there's only like two or three current manufacturers of spikes. Problem with our sport too, the barrier to entry is very high in terms of cost. These spikes are about $400 per set, and they get worn very quickly.
I was going to say
especially
that.
If you take hits and even the spikes, like they can potentially get dull. And once they're dull, you can't push into the ice. So at that point, they're useless.
So how often are you needing new shoes typically?
When I was in Park City, I had got these last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I bought two pair, one for training, one for race. My training set got me through the whole season, and I took, I think, close to 180 total runs between all three tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then race spikes, I raced in Whistler. So that was two runs. Mm-hmm. I raced in Park City, two runs, and I raced in Lake Placid for two runs. So six total runs on those spikes, 180 on the other spikes, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still technically fine. I'll still use them for training. I was able to keep them in good shape.
Oh, that's pretty good. I know for me as a runner, I can only do a certain amount of miles on my shoes and I need new ones. I'm like, I need sponsors, which speaking of that, do y'all have sponsors? Is that how you make a source of your income?
Or what income?
Right. I know. I'm like, I was a cheerleader, so I understand.
Yeah. So unfortunately, there's a couple different ways we can make money. Obviously you go out and you get personal sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
The Federation, depending on what level you are in the organization, you do get paid a stipend. Unfortunately, it's not much when we're traveling to these countries. And even just, you know, as a development athlete traveling in the U.S., all that expense is on us to develop ourselves.
Right.
So until you make the World Cup team, until you're truly funded, which right now, I think only two males on the men's side, and I'm not sure if all three or four females are funded on the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Austin and Dan are one and two. I'm pretty sure they're fully funded. So their hotel, flight, sliding fees, everything is paid for.
Right.
But they also had to come up through the ranks and pay their way, pretty much.
Totally. So, it's like, kind of like the minor leagues. You kind of have to like build your way up, start at all the way to the bottom and move your way up, or anything in life. If you have a job, you got to work your way up. And if you have a passion for it, it shows and you'll do everything. You invest in yourself. I'm always big on that. Like I have to invest in myself to succeed and it'll go in the long run. And so I guess my next question we were talking about, so competition wise, we're talking about competitions and to win, do you have to go the fastest? Is that what it is?
So to win, you have to go the fastest. So in normal competition, we get two runs. It's a random draw for the first run. And based on your time to the bottom, it's not really based on speed, it's based on time. So your finish time determines your second run positioning. So if you finish first in the first run, you'll start last in the second run.
Okay.
So you'll be last off the top. And vice versa. If you finish last on the first run, you'll start first. And then to win, it's obviously your combined time for two runs. Simple as that. For world championships and the Olympics, it's four runs. then there's some nuances within that. I think this year there was some, the IBSF, which is the overall governing body for the entire organization or for all organizations in the sport, they got rid of one of the racing circuits, which then put other athletes into the other circuits. So it kind of filled the fields up more. It used to be a cutoff at 20 fighters. So if you would make it, you know, in the top 20 after your first heat, you would get a second run. If you were 21st, you only got that one run and you don't get a second run, unfortunately. Okay. Same with the Olympics, top 20, after three runs, gets a fourth.
Okay.
Same with World Championships. This year, they bumped that number to 25.
Oh, well, that's
because
good.
There's now more athletes competing. Yeah.
Right. It's a growing sport. So, well, does it matter? Do you like going, would you rather go first or does the ice change depending on when everyone's sliding down on it?
So, yeah. So the ice does change. It also changes based on weather outside. The tracks, some tracks aren't covered really. So if it snows, and let's say the first half of the heat goes and it's not snowing, and the second half of the heat, you're now getting a snowstorm. Well, now I'm pushing on ice that's covered in snow, which I'm going to go slower. Simple. Right. Like it's very unfortunate, but that's just the nature of the sport.
Right. It's like anything, you can't really control Mother Nature, and it'll do what it do,
correct,
depending if you're what kind of track you're on. That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And is, well, we kind of talked about it, it's a growing sport. How many people are training with you per se? Is like, how big of a group is it?
On the men's side, currently we have three guys on World Cup. We have four on the Europa Cup. And I think we have about seven or eight in the development. So North America Cup and otherwise in just like normal learning how to slide type thing. So total on the men's side, maybe, you know, less than 20 for USA. And then on the female side, unfortunately it's less than that. We have four females on tech. Well, we have spots for four females on World Cup. And then Europa Cup, it's usually one or two currently. And then North America Cup this past year, we only had two, I think.
Okay. Wow.
For the whole circuit. So not very many.
Not many. It's a
bobsled,
few.
Bobsled, there is a lot more. Yeah.
Do you guys train together with bobsled or is skeleton like its own thing?
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. In like official trainings, no. It'll just be skeleton by itself and bobsled by itself.
Okay.
But if we're training just for like a camp, we'll put them both together for time savings.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like there's a lot of training that goes into it. I feel like doing it is the best source of training for me as a dancer. Getting my stamina was doing it. But do you have to do other sorts of training, like weightlifting, cardio? What all do you have to do outside of actually doing it?
Yeah. So for skeleton and bobsled, there's two parts of our training. Obviously, there's the sliding aspect and there's the pushing aspect. So the pushing aspect, they want us to be very powerful, very strong off the start. You know, you gain a tenth or two on the start, it could mean three or four tenths at the bottom or vice versa. So they want us to be very fast off the start. So a lot of strength training, a lot of sprint training. So my days usually consist of 5 to 6 days a week, either weight room training along with mobility training or on track workouts.
Okay, great. Is that typically, what is a typical schedule for you? Training day.
Unfortunately, because I work a full-time job, it's my training is usually after I work. So if I have like a heavy training day, it will be, I leave here at 5 o'clock, go to the gym, work out for roughly 2 to 3 hours, and then come home. Or if it's a sprint day, again, leave here, go to the track, and it's usually about an hour and a half at the track. Some days on the weekends, I can double that up. But they won't be like back to back. But I would have a two a day at that point.
It takes a lot of self-discipline because you have a job and then you go after and train after a long day of work. I was the same way as a cheerleader and you were required to have a job. And like we said, like you eventually will make money, but right now you're investing in yourself and you got to make pay the bills somehow. So that is
for sure.
Kudos to you. That's a long, hard day, but at least you're ending the day with something you love and something you're fighting for.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. So now we're talking about, I take it back to competition. I'm jumping all over the place. I just keep thinking of stuff. So since there's no breaks, how do you stop at the end of the course?
It's very steep. So once we cross the finish line, some of the places we go to, Lake Placid and Park City specifically, the last two-ish corners are uphill. And then you go into a long straightaway of just a very steep climb called a runout. So we literally just let gravity slow us down. And then we can also, you know, stand up on the sled with like my hands where I usually sit and dig my feet into the ground to help slow myself down. Bobsleds, they have a mechanism that digs into the ice and grabs to go across the line. Obviously, being a 300 or 400 pound sled takes a lot longer to slow down if it was just to glide to a stop. So they have that in place to stop them.
So now that you're at the bottom, and how heavy is a skeleton like sled? I would think.
Yeah. So my sled, I think I told you about this. Yeah. My sled is 81 pounds, 37 ish kilos right now.
Wow.
There is a max, there is a min, there's a max total weight we can be at, for men. It's 120 kilos, which is 263 pounds total. We want to be as close to that as possible. Obviously the heavier you are, hopefully the faster you are going downhill. But obviously if you're too heavy in one area or another, you'll push slower. Like if my sled is, I'm a little smaller. My sled has to be heavier to be able to get close to that 250, 263 mark or 250. I apologize. Can't remember the exact number. I know it's 120 kilo in pounds. We don't work in pounds, so I just work in kilo. But when I was getting ready for this season, I was sitting at 115 kilos. So I'm still 5 kilos under as a combined weight. And again, my sled is 37 of that.
It's so interesting, but it makes a lot of sense, like in science and stuff like that, that it all has to be a perfect weight to, you know, get your fastest speeds and go down in a perfect precision. And when you're like finishing and when you're done, what is that feeling? Are you out of breath? Are you panting? Like, is it a rush of emotions?
Yeah. It can, it's all that, right? When we start, we're sprinting for about 6 to 7 seconds total, which I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have to sprint, get on the sled, and now your focus is now sliding, you have to forget all that. You have to calm your heart rate. You have to be not, I wouldn't say as still as possible, but as calm as possible, just be relaxed on the sled. And that's a very difficult transition. When you get to the bottom, obviously your adrenaline is pumping, especially if it's a race. If it's training, it's a little bit different of a feeling, but you get to the bottom, start going up the outrun, and you can see the time. They have time at a couple different places on the outruns. So you can see your time, and you can see, and it shows your placing right beside it. So you can see where you're sitting and your time right away. So it's a big adrenaline rush. And especially like, that was a great run, but I'm sitting 15th. Like that, you know, it's immediate feedback, and sometimes it's not great. So you can try to not look at it. If you, especially if you're in a race, like on the time, I don't really want to look at the time. We get our time sheet after to show where we line up for the second heat. You can do your best not to see the time. You can see like where you start, but your time is going to be right beside it. So you could try to not look at it. But obviously if you're up toward the top, you know that you have a really good run. And if you're, if you're starting last, obviously you had a good run. If you're starting sooner, well, that wasn't a great run. What do I need to fix?
Right.
So
a lot of self-reflection. And you talked about it. You start, so it's like going from like 0 to 100, you start with the sprint and then you have to be calm. So on top of all the training, do you have to do like mental training, like meditation? Like how do you calm yourself down?
No, I don't specifically. Some people do, some people don't. We do a lot of mind runs. So you could say that's mental training. You know, for every run I take, it's, you know, maybe 10 or 15 like scenarios I'm running through my head of this run, I want to practice this. And if I get this, how is that going to look for the rest of the run? For the most part, if you make a change up higher, you know what's going to happen down lower. So you can prepare for those for the most part, as long as you keep everything else consistent and you know the change you make is going to produce this outcome. You can practice mind runs in your head and tell yourself, okay, I want this, this, and this. And as long as I do those things, I'll have this. But that's not always the case.
Right.
You can make one little mistake and now your whole run is completely different. So you have to be able to make those changes, one, on the fly, if you don't have what you're looking for. And the mind runs do help with that, to be able to help work yourself through all those different scenarios.
You have to be like laser.
And we do that for every track. That's just not. Yeah.
Yeah. Like locked in focus. And it sounds like if you just take your mind off for 1 second, it could go a lot differently.
Yeah. It can get dangerous. It can be very dangerous. If you have to be concentrated.
Right. If you do happen to crash, like depending on your crash.
It depends. So luckily we're so low to the ground that when we crash, it's normally just, we dump, like you come out of a corner and if you're still on the corner and the corner is going straight, you'll just flop over maybe a foot off the ground. Like it sucks. I've crashed once and I separated from my sled once, and that was in Whistler. I thought everything was going well. I go around the corner, it flattened out and I'm still up on the corner.
Right.
And I just plopped off upside down. That's pretty much as severe as it gets for us.
Okay.
For bobsled, roughly the same. But luge can be a lot more dangerous because they sit higher up on the ice. Their center of gravity is higher.
Right.
And there have been some very significant luge accidents over the years. So,
I mean,
they go a lot faster than we do.
It's something that you know going into the sport already. And it's like you're an athlete. You could have your good days and your bad days. So it's just like, but I'm glad it's not like super, it could be, but it doesn't sound like it could be like super extensive. And
not usually, no.
That's good. And your chin, we didn't talk about that. How close is your chin to the ground?
It's literally on the ice. So I'll show you my helmet here.
I was looking at those videos. I was like, whoa.
So the front of my helmet, you can see like this is tape that we have on here just to kind of like protect the paint, the finish. But it's already getting worn out. So this is scraping the ground when my face is down on the ice. So it's that close.
So close. Can you see or where are you looking? Are you looking forward or? Like where are your eyes?
So if my head's down, I'm looking as like I have my head down for the most part. We don't want to be like raised up off the sled looking up. We can bend our head up and then look forward. So I have a very limited range. So neck strength is a very big key. Even going through corners, we have to keep our head off the ice in the corners. And when your head didn't turn ways 4 to 5 times what it normally does in the corners when we're going 80 mile an hour, a lot of strength to keep it above the ice. And hopefully you know where you're going because you can't see, like you're buried in the ice. It's not like I'm able to really look until I'm out of the corner when that pressure comes off of me.
So, like you said, I think you said earlier, all you can really see is white. That's it.
That's
so cool. It's so, it blows my mind.
And that's one thing about like knowing the track. For sure. You have to know the track. When I went to Whistler, it was that was definitely a big jump for me specifically. The fastest track in the world, very intimidating. I did so much studying before I went there. Track review, watching POVs, and just doing mind runs myself of like, you know, how long can I expect to be in a corner? How long can I expect to be in a straightaway? And you do that for every single corner on the track, and Whistler has 16 corners. Wow. So
it's like a football player or anything. You got to study your plays and study the track because kind of going into it.
Exactly.
It's a lot of studying that goes into it, a lot of hard work and dedication. And going back to your, like we were talking about how your face is so close to the ground. Can you like feel it? Does it like vibrate at all?
Yeah, I mean, the track, obviously, it's not like skating on ice. It's not smooth. So it is very bumpy. It can be bumpy. It can be smooth. It all depends on weather. But if it's bumpy, yeah, my face is bouncing off the ice, potentially.
It comes back to that neck strength. I did something recently. Well, can't really say for legal reasons. Well, soon I will be able to say. But we had to do a lot of neck stuff. And I remember we did testing on our necks. And I was like, that's no joke. Like, they press so hard.
Yeah, we did it too. We did like the force plate testing.
It's crazy. But then when you think about it.
Yeah, we did it all too.
Yeah. So when you're like that close to the ground, you have to have a strong neck. For sure. So as a skeleton, what is the end goal? Is the Olympics? Is that what you're striving for? Is that the end goal?
For our sport, since there's really not much between like development and the end goal, the Olympics would be the end goal. There was I had a pretty big goal, and unfortunately I have a little bit of a setback right now. Next year, the World Championships is coming to Lake Placid. Stuff in the air, whether I'll even have an opportunity at that or not. And then a year after that, the Olympics is in Milan, Italy. Four years after that, it'll be in France. So between 26 and 2030, you know, those are the two big goals. And then apparently in 2034, it's coming back to Salt Lake. I probably won't be around for that, unfortunately.
Hey, maybe.
But
into existence. And we've talked about this. You are currently, you just had back surgery, correct?
Yeah. So getting ready for this season. Everything going through the summer was great. I was getting stronger. I was getting faster. I make it up to Lake Placid for preseason stuff in mid-October. And I'm up there. At this point, we're waiting for ice. We had push championships. And push championships, we have a whole indoor facility that's covered in ice that we can practice pushing because it is a big part of the sport. So we had push championships up there. I came up a few days after push champs, because I was having a little bit of issues with my back. At the beginning of the summer, I had gotten an epidural injection to try to help calm everything down, and it worked pretty well. Got through the whole summer with no issue. Coming into October, it started talking to me a little bit. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, hey, can we get this taken care of beforehand? So I got another epidural mid October. I let it go for a few days, and then I traveled to Lake Placid. And even while I was up there for that first week, I wasn't really doing a whole lot because I just wanted to make sure that everything would calm down. Unfortunately, after being up there for about a week, I took a shower. I get out, I'm putting my clothes on, and I wound up on the floor. So I re-herniated the disc. I didn't know what it was at the time. I thought it was like a muscle spasm because it felt weird. And it was very, very painful. So I was on the floor. My roommate, unfortunately, wasn't in there. So I had to get off the bathroom floor. That was on a Sunday. Going into the following week, we had SportsMed on site. So I was able to work with them throughout the week. But unfortunately, that following Friday, again, right after a shower, I was getting dressed. And I wound up on the floor again. Wow. And that was on October 31st, if I remember correctly. So on Halloween, we didn't have ice yet. So we were just still practicing and training to get ready to start sliding.
Right.
We weren't planning on starting the slide until around like November 15th. So I had 2 weeks roughly to get ready. So I stayed up there. I met with the doctor. I got an MRI. Unfortunately, the herniation got bigger from when it originally had happened. It was causing me a lot more issue than it did before. So made the decision with my coach, doctors, everything to schedule an appointment with my spine doctor back home to discuss potential surgery. Obviously, I didn't want surgery.
Right.
You know, it's very defeating. Like, it's not something that I really wanted. No pain right now.
No pain.
I'm still recovering. I'm still recovering. I still have 1 week left before I can even start any PT. So I have a doctor's appointment next week for that. But the surgery went great. And now I'm just going to try to build back up to, you know, hopefully get back on ice this fall.
For sure. I feel like any injury, it's so heartbreaking for especially yourself because you're in this position and then you're like, oh, why did this have to happen? But I really think that it all lines and you don't really see the bigger picture, but you're going to come out in the end stronger for it, even though you had to take 20 more million, the longer route to go that way. But I'm glad your surgery went well and you have no pain. Well, knock on wood for you. And I think seems like back surgery is a pretty big kind of surgery and to come back that quickly and you're almost getting ready to do PT and will continue to do what you love is, I think, is a success.
For sure. Yeah. I hope that as long as everything heals fine, it wasn't like it's not muscular. It's not bone. It's disc related. So there's really not much I can do physically to treat it per se. Once the doctor took that material out to be able to free up the nerve, at that point, it's letting scar tissue heal over it. And that's literally it. And then now me on my end, trying to make sure I don't re-herniate.
It just time.
That's about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Just being patient.
For sure.
Yep. I have patience, but if I was ever to have an injury, I probably would not be patient. But I'm glad you listened to your body. I am very, you know, selfish with myself and would be like, no, keep putting it off. But it's great that you took initiative and you're like, okay, there's something wrong with it. Let's go check it out so it doesn't get even worse.
Well, I originally injured it back in 2018. So even before I started the sport and I've been managing it since. And it's not been easy. I've gone weeks without lifting because of a flare up, but nothing like the two issues I had when I was in Lake Placid. That was the worst of it in the last 5 years. Yeah. So I had to make a decision.
Yeah.
So
you had to do what's best for you. And you're still in the process of recovering, but it sounds like you're on a good track. No pun intended. Good track to go back.
For sure. No, yeah. For sure.
I think, what else did I miss? I think we talked about your shoes. What clothes do you wear?
Yeah. So we wear the one piece speed suit. Okay. Let me grab it here.
I love yours. So perfect. I said, I love that you have it on.
I know I have it. Like I said, I would have grabbed my sled or my runners, but I don't even want to lift them right now.
You.
So
I don't.
It's my speed suit.
Cool.
It's actually kind of heavy. I mean, this is probably around 10 ounces. It's very thick. It's got a zipper all the way down. So we put it on. Obviously, those are the feet right here. Those are my arm sleeves. I put it on and put the hood on. And then I put my helmet on over top of it. And it's one piece. So very aerodynamic.
It's easy.
No protection, however. It's not warm. It doesn't have any padding. So when you hit a wall, there's obviously some tape here. It tears. I mean, obviously, I'd rather the tape take a hit than my bare skin at that point. So.
Oh, for sure. What kind of fabric is it?
It's stretchy. It's literally like.
Yeah, so that rips pretty easily.
It's thick.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I can pull on it and it won't rip.
Right.
But when we hit ice, it's almost like road rash. You might not even see a hole in your suit, but your entire arm will be covered in like a red mark.
So, do you feel it if you happen to hit the side or are you just so focused?
Oh yeah. It hurts so bad. I mean, going 80 mile an hour, just imagine falling off a bike at 80 mile an hour and getting road rash for a very like small period of time. That's also why if you do crash, they tell us to roll so you don't get ice burn. It can be very bad, especially for bobsled when they're stuck in the back of the sled, they have to wear what's called a burn vest. For that exact reason, if they get tipped, and either the pilot or the brakeman, if it gets, you know, tipped on the side that their backs are toward the ice, they're going to get pushed against the ice and they're just going to be going around the corner with their backs on the ice because the bobsled's tipped over.
Yeah.
So, and they have no control. They can't move. So they have to wear a burn vest or it can get very bad for them. Mm-hmm. Way worse than us.
Mm-hmm. If you happen to be in a scenario where you crash, how do you get off the course? Do you just have to?
So you'll come to a complete stop and you have to get out very quickly because the sled could very well potentially be going ahead of you and it can come back. So you have to get out as quickly as possible and hopefully you don't knock yourself out somehow.
Right.
Or you're going to have an 80-pound piece of metal coming back at you.
Yep. Uh-huh. And then I guess my next question, because you guys do more, or for most races, you do more than one run down the track. How do you get the sled back up?
So we have trucks. They're literally like a box truck with no door on the back. They back up to the dock. We load, you know, six to eight people inside with their sleds, their down bags, everything. And then they drive us back up to the top.
Oh, okay, cool. That's simple enough. Yeah. I was like, good thing you didn't have to drag that all the way up.
No. We're very lucky with that.
Right. Conserve your energy.
Track workers.
Yeah. Shout out to the track workers for sure. What's the average age of a skeleton racer, excuse me?
For our team, our World Cup one, I think is 28 or 29. I'm 30. Mm-hmm. Our World Cup two is around the same age. Mm-hmm. Even the World Cup three, I think is around that same age as well. So late 20s for them. We have another, I think he's 32, a little older, but he's one of the fastest pushers. Mm-hmm. He's actually from Texas, from Austin. and then we have a couple younger athletes around, I think Brad just turned, I think 22. So we have some younger, some older.
Okay. So yeah, it's a pretty good range. I feel like for it's cheerleaders, it was the
late 20s.
Same range for a cheerleader, as long as you were physically fit and you could still move and go fast and compete, then, you know, age is just a mindset. Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, is there anything that you would like to add that we didn't get to discuss today before we get to my fun game?
I think we covered most of the sport.
Covered it all? Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I will say one thing. Yeah. I will say one thing. Back to the travel piece specifically, we obviously have to travel with our equipment.
Yes.
Flying with an 80-pound sled gets expensive. So not only, like I talked about before, we have expenses already. Traveling with the sled, they hit us with multiple fees, you know, so we get the oversized and overweight fee and they double stack those on the airline on the way. Most of our expenses is equipment transportation. So it's very unfortunate.
Do you put it
in? I could spend $500 one way. I have a case. Yeah.
A case. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But you have to add that on top of your flight fee.
Correct. And it can potentially be more than the flight.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can try to work with them to get it taken off because they don't like to recognize that it's sports equipment in the terms of like regular sports equipment. Mm-hmm. So they just charge it as an extra bag and not as sports equipment. So it's kind of unfortunate sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Depending on the airline. Do you usually like to stay on one airline? Rack up those miles?
I've been flying United. Flying United. I know Southwest, some of the athletes that do fly Southwest get lucky because they have that that additional extra bag, like no extra charge type thing. So they can get it pretty much taken care of. But Southwest obviously doesn't go international.
Yeah.
So we get hit with those fees going internationally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very interesting. But when you think about it, yeah. And it's nice when, you know, well, the bigger sports like NFL, they all of their equipment is just there for you. And it's funny cheerleader. Yeah, it's cheerleader. We always had to bring everything. Like we had to pack up our whole lives, like uniforms, pom-poms. I mean, granted, it's a lot smaller than what you have to pack, but still, it's you got to remember it all and you can't just go there and just buy it. Like you got to bring your stuff. Do you make like a checklist to make sure you have everything?
I literally go through my stuff multiple times before I leave, but it could, you know, the airline could, you know, not fly your sled or not fly your sliding bag. So you could be with your sled So you could have no equipment. You couldn't, you might not have your shoes, your helmet, your speed suits, nothing. So at that point you would have to borrow somehow, until your bag arrives, or the other way, your sled might not arrive. Mm-hmm. And now you potentially have to rent a sled that is not yours and have to figure it out for a race. So it all depends.
It all depends. That's so scary. What's it like? It's probably not as good renting one. What's it like sledding on someone else's that you haven't been practicing on?
I've been fortunate. I've had my sled the entire time and I've been able to slide specifically on mine. So I can't really speak to that.
Okay.
But different sleds do handle differently.
Oh.
So there is a learning curve.
Mm-hmm. And then we go back to that point where you said it has to be a certain amount of weight. And I feel like renting one, would they have all that options? I probably not.
It depends. You get what you get. Mm-hmm. You might be able to add weight. You might be able to take out weight. It depends on the sled.
Right. Well, knock on wood again for you so that never happens. Well, this has been so much.
Or they lose it. They better not lose it.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. I feel like that would be a hard thing to lose, though. That's a pretty big thing to lose.
I would hope not. Yeah.
I've had luggage before that was like, I had a layover and it was like stuck in the layover city. So it never made it to my final destination. But I was like, it's in that baggage claim. Like, can we just move on? But that's so funny. Well, this has been so great. We're going to play a quick little game before you go, just to get to know your personality a little bit better. So we're calling this a 2-minute drill, and we're going to kind of tailor it to you.
Okay.
For yes, if you are on board, yes, you're going to say fast. Oh, look at that. And if you're slow, if you want to say no, you say slow. So yes is fast. Slow is no. Okay. All right. Okay. Here we go. Mm-hmm. First one, tattoos.
I don't have any personally, so I'm going to say slow, but I'm not against it.
All right. Good answer.
Yeah, for sure.
Roller coasters.
So I'm going to say fast. Couple reasons. One, we have literally one of the best amusement parks in the country at Cedar Point.
Mm-hmm.
The roller coaster, I go there roughly every year. Been going since I was a kid, so huge fan of roller coasters.
Yeah, and I feel like your sport is kind of a fun adult roller coaster.
Sure. Yeah, totally. It really is. Yeah.
All right, next one, movies.
I do like going to the movies. I've been obviously hooked on Marvel for the longest time, so I'm going to say fast.
All righty, FaceTime.
Can there be like a medium speed, just because I have to do it sometimes for work?
Perfect.
Yeah, I have to do it for work. So I don't mind it. And like, this is the first like of this kind of interview I've ever given.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not used to this kind of exposure or, you know, non-work type face to face. So I'll say in the middle on that one.
Medium. Happy medium. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one. Road trips.
Since I've literally put like 50,000 miles on my car in the last 3 years, I'm going to have to say fast. I've literally driven multiple trips to Park City, multiple trips to Lake Placid. I'm lucky I only live about 8 hours from Lake Placid, but it's a 2-day drive to Park City. And then I've driven from Park City to Whistler, which, you know, going all the way up through Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and into Canada. Road trips. I love road trips.
Yeah, that's a lot of miles, but I'm glad you like road trip because you're traveling so much.
For sure.
Okay, next one, secret handshake.
Well, I've never really done a secret handshake. Never really had the need for it. I never really played team sport, so.
Alrighty. Surprises.
I'm going to say fast. I like to be the one giving surprises, but usually I don't really receive surprises, but when I do get them, I do like them.
It's fun if someone can keep the secret, keep the surprise.
Yeah.
Definitely. Next one is leftovers.
I'm going to have to say fast just because I meal prep. So pretty much everything I cook is technically leftover. So yeah, I'll say fast.
That's something we didn't even talk about. Is that like, is nutrition a big part of, yeah.
So with me being smaller, I started this, just real quick tangent. I started this sport at around 145 pounds. Mm-hmm. I went into last season at 175.
Wow.
So I've gained 30 pounds in the past 2 years because I needed to, and I still need to gain more. I'm sitting at around 166 right now, just because I haven't been able to train, and I dialed back my caloric intake to fit me not training. But normally when I was training heavy, and sliding heavy and trying to gain weight, I was eating about 4,100 calories a day. So nutrition is a big, big deal, especially for somebody who's small, trying to put on that healthy weight. Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, you are still working out. So 4,100 calories, that's a lot. Would you feel like you're just like stuffing your face, or was it like you were good?
For the first part of the day, yeah. I mean, luckily, like I said, since I work from home, it's easy for me to just go cook my food, eat. A big chunk of that was a mass gaining shake. So around 1,000 to 1,100 calories of that was a mass gaining shake. And then around 2,900 was straight food, which in reality, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. If you like, for me, I was eating 3 good sized meals a day, plus the mass gainer shake. But once you've ate that much and now you're eating or you're drinking roughly 36 ounces of a protein shake, it's a lot to end your day. So,
That's a lot.
So that one I'm forcing down when I'm drinking the protein shake, I'm trying to just
and is there something
get it down as quickly as possible.
Drink something, it's harder. I mean, I guess it's harder to eat, but also when you're drinking, it kind of feels like it's in your stomach
for longer and it feels thick. Like it's just, yeah, for sure.
It's like sitting there.
Yeah.
All right. We'll do 2 more here. Sing in the shower.
I'm going to pass. Or not pass, slow. I don't sing. Not usually, no.
It would be tragic if anyone heard me singing. All righty, last one. Early mornings.
I'm going to have to say fast. Mm-hmm. Normally with work, I don't get up too early for my work days. But when we're training and like when I'm in Lake Placid, I'm up at like 5:30, 6 a.m. To get up, get ready, to get awake for one. Normally our training sessions are in the morning at 9 or 10 a.m. And we have to obviously eat. Mm-hmm. So get up early, eat, get everything ready, head to the track, get a warm up in. There's a lot to do prior to sliding. So that early piece is very important. Mm-hmm. On either training days or race days.
I feel that. I feel like there's not enough time in the day. So the only answer is to wake up early.
No, there's not.
Oh, well, sure. This has been incredible. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you were able to come on here and talk about this. It's been so fun. Is there a one fun fact you could tell us that we didn't learn about you today?
One fun fact. I ride motorcycles. So I have 2 motorcycles. Cool. So that's something, you know, obviously in the summer, Ohio, it's obviously very cold and we're under a winter storm warning. So I'm not riding it right now. But yeah, I do love riding motorcycles. So.
Oh, that's cool. Do you work on them yourself? Fix them up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I work on my motorcycles. I work on my car.
Oh, that's a fun little hobby. And I bet it's beautiful when the weather is nice.
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, even people put so much hate toward Ohio, but riding here, it's pretty nice.
Do you get a lot of snow up there in Ohio? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the we got about 4 inches over the past couple of days. And then tonight we're supposed to get like 8 to 10. I live almost in the snow belt. So a lot of the lake effect snow coming off of Lake Erie will just destroy about 50 miles south of the lake, all the way up through Ashtabula over into to Buffalo. Obviously, you see what happened to Buffalo. And they're getting more this week because of the storm that we're getting tonight. They're going to get more this weekend. And I think they host a game there this weekend again.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
They do. They do.
They're going to be in the same situation they were last week with Pittsburgh. So
funny. Yeah.
And I'm a huge Browns fan. Very unfortunate. Obviously, Texans. Yes. I know. We beat them the first time. DJ Chark played great.
Yep. Joe Flacco, was exciting to see the Browns in there, though.
Help. Yeah, for sure.
It was exciting. Sure.
Everybody up there is excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know Cleveland.
I mean, we were in the playoffs with Baker.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We were in the playoffs with Baker, and now he's doing great with Tampa Bay. He's into the divisional round.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I loved seeing Joe Flacco. I loved his little story of, like, he was taking his kids to school, and they just called him up, and he did a great job.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He did a great job.
And we're not sure if he's coming back yet next year or not.
Right.
Cleveland's already wasted so much money on Deshaun Watson that...
See, that's one thing.
All due respect, he did. I know. He, with all due respect, he did go 5-1 this year when he did start before his surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. You know, that's huge.
Right.
And then we had 5 other quarterbacks. So this year,
he was good when he was useful.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much. I hope you have a fantastic day. And I can't wait to follow your journey. Wishing you the best of luck in your recovery. And can't wait to see all the things you do.
All right. I appreciate it, Taylor. Thank you.
Wasn't that insane? I gave y'all the forewarning. So cool. I'm so glad he was on here to tell his story and more about Skeleton. And I can't wait for the Winter Olympics so we can see it all in action, and we'll be cheering him on. So now it's time for Sideline Scoop, the big story that everyone's talking about that a lot of people can't believe he did, is Jason Kelce. He stole the show from Taylor Swift in Buffalo because he was shirt off, beer in hand, and having the time of his life cheering on his brother, Travis Kelce. And they soon said, like, after the fact, that was the first time that he had met Taylor. So it was so funny that he was so out of this world crazy. But that's Travis Kelce, and he's not in season anymore. So why not live your best life? And then now we're getting into our next story. Jim Harbaugh, they announced he is the new coach for the Chargers. So if the Ravens win the Super Bowl, that means it's the domination of the Harbaughs, because Jim won the Natty. And his brother John is the head coach of the Ravens, and they're in Super Bowl reach this year. And if that happens, it'll be literally two big championships, the Super Bowl, the Natty, both going to the Harbaughs. Crazy. But we will see what happens, because we got to get to those AFC and NFC championship rounds first. Starting with the AFC, we have the Ravens and the Chiefs. They're playing each other. And the NFC is the Lions versus the 49ers. I would love to see, and I've seen this all over social media, I think the world wants to see the Ravens and the Lions in the Super Bowl. And that's what I want to see. But there's this little conspiracy that's also going around. I don't know if y'all saw it, but for the past couple of years, the Super Bowl logo has matched the color of the teams that have made it into the Super Bowl. So if that is what's going down this year, it's purple and red. So that would mean the Ravens and the 49ers. If that happens, do we think it's coincidence, or is there something more that the NFL is not telling us about? I guess we just got to wait and see what happens in that final round, because it should be interesting. But I'm really rooting for the Lions and the Ravens, but I would really like to see the Lions take it. I just would love that for them. I just think Detroit's a great city. They have a great fan base, and they just haven't had this, and it would be great for them. But you know me, I'm very neutral when it comes to team. I love just players. I love a great game. I always say that. I just love a great game. So give me a great game, and then we'll see who's going to Super Bowl. Woo, woo. it's all happening so fast. I mean, football season flies by so fast. And then it feels like it goes so slow when it's in the off season. So I'm just so grateful to have this podcast so we can talk to great people that are not only football players, but also in all different types of sports so we can go year round. I'm so thankful for you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Please make sure to subscribe, and I love you all so much, and we'll see you next week.